Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Sanzi isn't social distancing enough. He's too close to people. We are worried for him. What was it like to be walking in that circumstance?
Well, if they're talking about the Dustin Johnson interview, that was totally my fault, 100%. It was instinctual. It was muscle memory. It was just turn and speak to an athlete who's just right. done something. And it was totally my fault. The second we were done, I was yelled at by everybody. And
this is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty, then, we are on the air. I am sitting actually on the west side of Uncle Benny's table. Michael is sitting on the east side, or
southeast.
maybe I'm sitting on the north side of Uncle Benny's table, and you're on the south side of Uncle Benny's table. I think that's more accurate. I'm on the north side, but I don't really know exactly. But in any case, Michael is 6 feet away, which is good. Let me start with a bunch of things. First of all, my deep thanks to Marcy Dillon for the information. I appreciate that. My thanks to Brian McIntyre, former head of public relations for the NBA, who actually sent me one of the few remaining shirts, quoting Rasheed Wallace, "Both teams played hard." Okay, I now have that T-shirt. I'm happy. And a bunch of shout-outs now. As people just insist on having me shout stuff out, so I'm going to do this. Steve Carter, planning to get married on May 23rd. That's this weekend.
Good luck.
Can't do it. Knows it. Has postponed it. Happy birthday to Johnny Chavkin in Doha. That's May 20th. Is that today or tomorrow?
Today.
Today's. So happy birthday to Johnny Chavkin in Doha. And Rob in Chantilly, by the way, has the exact same birthday, who sent this. Happy birthday to Mike Roseberry. He planned to attend the Kentucky Derby to celebrate his 50th birthday. Not going to happen. Happy birthday to Major William F. Morrissey. That's the 8th of May. We missed it by a little bit, but happy birthday to Major William F. Morrissey. Today is Eldine Bacop's 80th birthday. This is sent from her son in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, who says she has no idea who you are and is not going to hear this. So that was pleasant and good to do. Again, happy birthday to Daniel Ballard. That is today, Wednesday, May 20th. And Dean Frazier, yesterday, hit 70 years old. So we say happy birthday to all of them. And now I want to do a couple of other things after doing that. I told you the other day that Eddie Tapscott called. And he just said he goes through his Rolodex and he, you know, calls people he hasn't talked to in a while. We had this very pleasant conversation. And I got this beautiful note from Kathy Orton, who listens to the podcast all the time, who I worked with for many years at the Washington Post. And she said, "I was listening to the thing you said about Eddie, and so I wanted to find out how you were." And she wrote me an actual note, which was so nice. And I got a call last night from Sam Smith. And Sam said, so Sam Smith, because he was in the Jordan doc. So Sam Smith said to me, "You know, I've gotten calls from hundreds of people to be on their shows, and I haven't gotten a call from you." And I go, "Yeah, right. Well, why would I call you to review that? Well, you know, why would I do that? I mean, I'm talking to Wilbon about it constantly. I talked to Aldridge about it. I can't keep talking to everybody about it." And Sam and I had a really pleasant chat. And because I've always liked Sam Smith very much, and he had that great book, The Jordan Rules, where apparently has led to tremendous back and forth enmity between Horace Grant and Michael Jordan. And anything that leads to people hating each other makes me happy, which gets me to this. It just, I don't want to get too political here, but it does not get any better than Nancy Pelosi going on television last night and describing her horror, I would say her mock horror, at the fact that Donald Trump is taking hydroxychloroquine, whatever it's called. And she said, "Someone in his age group and someone in his weight group shouldn't be taking this, morbidly obese." She called him morbidly obese on television, and he fired back, "She's a sick woman. She's got a lot of mental problems." These are two of the five most important people in the country, if not two of the three most, or two of the two most important people in the country, the leaders of their respective parties. And they're getting into a cat fight. That's great, Michael, isn't it? I mean, that's great.
I just love that Pence goes into the fray by saying, "I'm not taking the hydroxychloroquine."
No, he's not.
So that says all you need to know.
He's not taking it at all. All right.
By the way, are we sure that he's taking that and not just eating the cookies called Hydrox?
It's possible. I like Hydrox cookies better than Oreos.
Yes. So
except you failed the Hydrox Oreo test.
I failed the test, but I still like them better.
You like the idea of them better.
We didn't get to this the other day. We didn't get to the death of Eddie Haskell. Ken Osmond, 76 years old, dies. There's a lovely obituary in the Washington Post by Ken Osmond. By Harrison Smith about Ken Osmond. And you have to be old to remember Leave It to Beaver, although I guess Leave It to Beaver has been in syndication for 50 years. And I guess, have you ever seen Leave It to Beaver?
Never
seen. Okay. Nigel, have you ever seen Leave It to Beaver?
Watched it religiously when I was a kid. Eddie Haskell, one of my favorite characters of all time.
Right. So I'll just read this. With his curly blonde hair, flair for hijinks, and obsequious way with teachers and parents, Mr. Osmond's Eddie was an indelible television character for viewers of Leave It to Beaver, which ran in syndication for decades and practically defined the image of middle-class boyhood and the all-American family during the Eisenhower era. That's probably true. Eddie Haskell was a guy who would be obsequious and suck up to adult figures whenever possible, and then when they turned their back, would take a nail gun and stick it in their children's head if he could. Yeah, that's essentially who he was.
Fair. Yes.
And he would always say Wally and the Beaver, Wally was Wally and the Beaver was Theodore. And so Eddie Haskell would ask Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver, Barbara Billingsley and Ward. What was Ward's last name?
Was it Fred Ward?
No. His first name was Ward. His second name was something else. Fred Ward is a different actor. His actual name, Barbara Billingsley, was her actual name. Anyway, he would say things, are Wallace and Theodore home? Might they be able to come out to play? And then again, as I said, he'd put a nail gun in the Beaver's head. It was
Hugh Beaumont.
It's not Ward. It's Hugh Beaumont.
Well, his Matt character's Groening. Name is Ward Cleaver.
Yes. Matt Groening, who created Bart Simpson, one of the great characters in the history of television, he said he would vibrate with happiness when Eddie appeared on screen. And he said, Bart Simpson is the son of Eddie Haskell. So that's who it's patterned after. I would think, and this happens in television, it happened more when there was less television than there is now. Now there is so much television that we no longer really have indelible characters. It's rare. But in those days, when there were only three networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, if you got a show on and your show was on for a few years, you were totally typecast as that character. Ken Osmond was so typecast as Eddie Haskell that he basically had to quit the business. He became a cop in L.A. at one point. He joined the LAPD because there was nothing left for him to do on television. There are characters like this. It sort of ends around 2000 with the proliferation of cable, maybe a little bit earlier than that when you could get a lot of shows on cable and there were original programs on cable. So it became more diffuse. Your stardom became more diffuse.
But I also think the taste of your audience changed where you weren't looking for those, I would say, simple archetypes that you fit one sort of narrative, because now you see some of these indelible characters. You look at some of the cast from Game of Thrones and you just wonder what they will look like as they move on from that franchise.
Okay, so maybe that's true, but Game of Thrones on HBO is still only getting 3 million people a week.
Yes.
Leave It to Beaver got 35 million people a week. So there would be characters you just could not run away from it. If you were in a long-running sitcom, if you were in a long-running drama series, like my favorite series of all time, the cop show that I love with Frank Farrillo and Joyce Davenport, Hill Street Blues, those people didn't get second shots. That was all they had, because everybody knew them as that character. So I guess I'm tough for Ken Osmond, so I'm sorry about that for him. But it's a very, very nice obit in the Post today. Dog vomit comes up again today. Is the dog, Jesse threw up twice last night, once at 1:30 in the morning and once at 3 in the morning, and that was it for me. I was up from that point on, from 3 in the morning on, and she threw up like things that were like smooth, like rocks. But Carol believes they're part of a bone she may have eaten because they were all bleached white, which would happen in her stomach. And, you know, as I've said many times, dogs, when they throw up, then they get back into bed. They don't care. They're not bothered by this.
So you didn't put her on the brat diet?
I didn't put her on anything. I was a little bit bothered by this, to be fair.
What are you feeding her?
She gets the same. No, this is something she ate off the street.
I think this has to do with the amount of treats that you guys give her.
But these are not treats.
Well,
these
the bones. The bones are these savory treats that you give her when you're having dinner and we're over to try and
Carol does that. I don't like that because she always gets sick after eating those bones. She hasn't had one of those bones in a while, I don't think.
So will you make the rice later today or is it already on the
stove? We have rice. We've got rice. We're ready to go on rice. But that's for a different orifice. That's not for dog vomit. That's a different deal. That's a different deal. So the other day I was asked to do by my friend Alex Podlegar, who is the head of PR at Pinehurst. He said, would you do me a favor? Would you just record something that says, you know, I can't wait to get back to Pinehurst. A lot of people who we know are doing it. And he showed me a video of Mike Golick doing it. And I said, okay, sure, I'll do it. So I recorded this video that went, hi, I'm Tony Kornheiser. And I can't wait to get back to Pinehurst. But you know what? I'm not sure Pinehurst is going to let me back. I'm not sure I'm ever going to be able to play number two again. I was a 16, then I was an 18, then I was a 20. Now I'm about a 35. I can't hit it in the air. I'm serious. Every shot I hit that's not on the tee goes right into the ground. And it's, you know, my kids scratch. It's so embarrassing. And I look at the camera and I go, did I lose track of the subject here? Am I okay? And I just sent that to him, which, of course, he loved. And he sent me a note back saying, you can come back and play even if the Rangers and the caddies don't want to have anything to do with you, which I thought was a nice note. I thought that was very nice.
Yeah, the only thing I would have added is tell Doak to be waiting with the putter because I'll be putting it from everywhere.
Yeah, Doak. Doak's my guy. Doak is my caddy. So I did that. And I did that Binghamton. I did that Binghamton thing. Have I told people about the Binghamton thing?
Yes. This is like when I called you about the car that was
stolen
in front of
your house. Have you seen it? Because I've seen the whole – I've now seen it's about 30 minutes long and a lot of Binghamton graduates talk and a lot of – 2020 graduates talk, and it's really quite lovely. It's quite wonderful. I described what I said.
Mm-hmm.
I did already.
Yes, were you insulted the class of 2020?
I didn't insult them.
Is it what talking about Cornell? How you
yes.
wished you'd gone there?
Yeah. No, I didn't say I wished I'd gone to Cornell. No, what I said was, look, I'm Tony Kornheiser, and I graduated from this college in 1970. That's 50 years ago. It's a tremendously long time. And, you know, there was a period of time where I could not remember who my graduation speaker was. And then my wife said to me, you didn't go to graduation. You had a job. I said, oh, yeah, that's probably true. And I said, well, you know, the first 30 years out of school, I just told people I went to Cornell anyway. So what's the difference? And I just said, but it's a great school now. And I'm really proud of it. And I had dressed. Michael, I didn't talk about this.
You did last Wednesday.
I did, and I said what I had dressed up in.
You did not describe what you wore.
Okay, well, so because when I'm being filmed, I wore a Binghamton shirt, a Binghamton hat, and I said, look, they gave me this hat, they gave me this shirt, and then I held up a golf bag, and I said they gave me this high-quality golf bag. I've done great. You can do great, too. Graduation, big deal. Go to someone else's graduation. And that was what I did. Other people took it far more seriously than I did, which surprised me a little bit. Billy Baldwin was in it. You know Billy Baldwin? Oh, he's sure. One of the Baldwin brothers. Alec Baldwin's one of his younger brothers. He went to Binghamton. He wrestled there.
Was Flo the keynote speaker?
No, Flo was there. Flo did 10 seconds. She just blew everybody a kiss and said how happy she was
for
everybody.
So when she does that, does she have to be
She's not in
character?
Flo. She's not, no. She's as Stephanie. And so you wouldn't necessarily know her. That singer, Ingrid, what's her name? He says,
Michelson?
Yeah, yeah. She did Michelson, something. She was very nice. Paul Reiser did a Cornell line, too, which really bothered me. Because we were listed in the video in alphabetical order of first names. So I was next to last.
Oh, they didn't go
as
with Anthony?
Tony. No, they went Tony. And so Paul Reiser already had a Cornell line. And it looked like I sort of stole from Paul Reiser, which upset me because I didn't. I mean, I've never met Paul Reiser. I didn't steal from him, nor would I. Mark Lawrence was very funny. He's the guy who wrote Words and Music. And he wrote, you know,
Words and Music.
Words music, and Lyrics, Lyrics and Music.
Music and Lyrics.
Yeah, that's a really great movie.
Great movie.
It's a great movie. He did that. The best line of the thing was by our one and only Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, who was on the impeachment committee, actually. And he looked in the camera and he said, as we say in Brooklyn, mazel tov. And it's just not a line you expected from Hakeem. And I thought that was really funny.
It works for New York State University.
So it's really funny. And now, so Harvey Sanger has now, he's doing little sort of funny bits once a week or so, but he thinks that's going to get old. He wants to start podcasting, and he asked me if I would do a podcast with him. So, of course, I'll do a podcast with him. He said it would take about 30 minutes. I said, 30 minutes? We're just getting started at 30 minutes. anything else you want to – do you want to talk about the Carpenter Bees?
I'll let you talk about the Carpenter Bees.
I'll do this one little thing about the Carpenter Bees. We have Carpenter Bees on our gate. These giant, fat, morbidly obese bumblebees.
Look like killer wasps.
They're gigantic, and they've burrowed holes in the actual wooden gate, and they've started a ranch of carpenter bees. They're laying eggs. The carpenter bees are laying eggs inside the actual gate.
Inside the gate post.
And I've called Finn.
If this Finn, who is a landscaper.
I've called Finn. I've said, Finn, kill these bees.
Well, you can't get Finn off the golf course.
And Finn has just said to me, they're a sign of spring. They won't hurt you. And I said, Finn, just come over here and kill the bees.
What's so great is you and Mom guilt us for not bringing the boys over often enough when we're trying to be socially distant and we're trying to keep the boys outside.
I love the boys.
And so, yeah,
and now
we've developed a great habit where Walker likes to scoot back and forth. Walker, who is just a Harriet the Spy, who is just checking in on all the neighbors as he's collecting data what cars are in the wrong spot. And so, of course, you would have these bees that are just loitering outside of the one point of entry that we use.
They're gigantic, and I need Finn to kill them. Or if somebody out there is a bee specialist and can come over here to my house and kill these things.
I just wanted to spray it with all the hand sanitizer we have.
Do you think that would, if I dropped Purell on it, do you think that would be meaningful?
We'll make sure it's over 65%.
All right, let's get out of here. We're going to come back with an actual show. David Aldridge is going to join us, and we will talk to David about his appearances in the Jordan documentary. He was great.
His
David
recall is amazing.
David was great. So we'll talk about that. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Vincero ad and its new copy, and I'm going to read it. We are partnering with Vincero Watches once again, and we're excited to have them as a sponsor. Vincero creates the most incredible looking watches at such an incredible price point. Seriously, watches that are stunning and well under $200. These guys know how important it is to feel your best and shop from brands you can trust. Go check out their watches at VinceroWatches.com. Look, let me just tell you this. I have one of these watches. Michael picked it out for me.
I believe it's the Chrono S.
It is beautiful. It has a dark face with copper Roman numerals on it and a copper sweep second hand. It's terrific looking.
I chose the blue-brown for myself.
I showed this to Bonnie Gets It Done, and Bonnie bought one for Artie. I mean, these things are great. Even if you're just a regular guy who enjoys the game, there's always going to be an occasion when you want to really impress, even on a Zoom call maybe, and your smartwatch combo just won't cut it. Free shipping, 30-day returns, and they guarantee your watch for 2 years. This is why they have over 21,000 five-star reviews, because you won't find a better-made watch for this good of a price anywhere. Take advantage of 20% off everything on their website. None of their new items are off limits, and they have brand new watch collections you need to see for yourself online right now. Visit VinceroWatches.com, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, pronounced in the Italianate manner, Vincero. When you purchase, the discount is automatically applied at checkout, so you don't even have to use the code. It's automatic, 20% off. It's that easy to shop Vincero.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Stuck Inside. Can't imagine what it references. It is sent to us by a longtime little, Kristen John LeBlanc from Nova Scotia, Canada. This is the music of her cousin, Julian Babin, or Julian Babin, B-A-B-I-N, with his permission. This is Stuck Inside. We're going to play two songs by Julian today, Nigel, right? Two songs?
That's right. Yep.
Wonderful. And Julian is playing in David Aldridge, and there's a bunch of things I want to get to. But every time David is on, this is the most important question I can ask. Because we are all stuck in home, at home, and because we don't move around as much as we used to, there is great potential for people parking illegally in front of our homes. David, have you faced down this problem in recent days?
That is such a good question to start us off, Tone.
No.
It's been quiet around here. Actually, I have had to move. We've had to move our cars because they're doing something construction city under the. They had to cut up the sidewalk in front of the house.
Oh,
so there's no parking for like 4 days right in front of the house, and so we had to move. And I made a very calculated decision. If you have to do this, you cannot park right in front of the front door of someone else's house.
Right. You can't do that.
You have to do it in the back, so, or on the side. So we're trying to do that. I'm going to go look to make sure nobody slashed my tires when I go down the block later on today.
It's a very important thing, you know, because in a pandemic, of all the things you learn about a pandemic, you learn exactly whose cars belong where on your street. You learn exactly that. By the way, I said this in the open, and Sean, David's crackling a little bit, if we can tone that down. I said this in the open. Brian McIntyre sent me a Rasheed Wallace shirt. Both teams played hard. I have it, so I'm very happy about that. Let's talk about
the best line in the last dance. He had the best line in the last dance. There was, of all the people that they interviewed, his was the best when they asked him about the conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. You can't say it, but it's great.
No, it's, yes, you cannot. So I had called David a couple of weeks ago, and I said, David, your appearances in the Jordan documentary are great. They are just great. What did you think? I assume that you watched all of it. I watched all of it. What did you think of it overall?
I thought it captured the time extremely well, Tony. I mean, you were around, I was around, you know, people who were going to NBA games and covering them and watching them over the years at that time. It was the flavor of that era was just the incredibly bitter rivalries that were central to the story of every season. You know, first it was when I came into the league, it was obviously Boston and the Lakers, you know, slugging it out every year. And then Detroit came up, and it was, could Detroit get past Boston? And then Chicago came up, when it was Chicago, could Chicago get past Detroit? And could anybody in the West get past the Lakers, you know? And so I thought it captured that very well. I thought it captured Jordan very well. I mean, I think, you know, for all of the talk about whether, you know, you should have had, you know, David McCullough or Doris Kearns Goodwin or somebody like that do the documentary.
Right.
I thought, considering that, you know, they had to get Jordan's approval, essentially, to do the thing, I thought they did a very good job of capturing, you know, his faults as well as his greatness as a player. I mean,
yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I know that Jordan had a certain amount of control over it, which led me to this. Jordan allowed Scottie Pippen to be destroyed in this thing. Absolutely destroyed, both in his interviews and on the court and everything else. I saw Jordan's hand in that, and I wondered if you saw that. I won't ask Wilbon this, because Wilbon will just say, oh, no, they're great friends. But I saw the malevolent hand of Michael Jordan in this, and I wondered if you did.
I don't know. I mean, well, I've said this, you know, Tony, people have asked me about Scotty, you know, lots of questions in the series about, but they've asked me about Scotty, and I've said, you know, first, Jordan did say early, I don't remember which episode, but he said early, we don't win anything without Scotty.
That's,
you know,
right.
Scotty was what, you know, Scotty was the best teammate I ever had. You know, I'm paraphrasing him, but that's essentially what he said. But you can't, you have to capture 1.8. You have to talk about it.
Yes,
you can't
not
talk about it. I mean, I don't know how you can talk about that era without talking about 1.8. Because it was one of the most, you know, potentially devastating moments, not just for the Bulls, but for Scottie Pippen. you know, it was probably worse than the migraine game. I mean, nobody, you're not happy he had a migraine, but nobody's going to kill him for getting a migraine. People get them, you know, and it is debilitating. But 1.8 was a choice. You know, it was a choice.
Why do you think?
Said he would do it again.
Yes. Why would he, after 25 years, why would he say that?
Exactly.
Why?
So I don't know how you can say Jordan in that context. How did Jordan hang Scottie? Scottie hung himself, you know, by owning it, by being somewhat proud of the decision that he made, you know? And so I don't know how you can tell that story without including that. And they also, again, showed you the season when Scottie was great and was an MVP level player the first year without Jordan. So, I mean, I think you got to look at all of it. And I think, like Scottie with Jordan, they looked at just about all of it. And Juanita's not in it. And that's fair criticism. Now, I don't know why Juanita's not in it. I don't know if they asked her and she said no. I don't know if Jordan told them no Juanita. I don't know. But you can. I certainly think she could have given you some sense of what it was like to be with this man in those years.
So my son.
Go ahead. I'm
sorry. Yeah, my son, Michael, tell David what impressed you the most when you saw David on TV.
Oh, just your recall for the final moments of these games that happened close to 30 years ago.
Well, I mean, I'll say this. I remembered most of those. Some of them, they had to remind me, and I'd go, oh, yeah, that's right. That happened that night. You know, I'm not Kreskin. And see, I dated myself by saying Kreskin. Nobody under 40 is going to know who Kreskin was.
No. How do you think LeBron James feels about this Jordan documentary and the totality of it and the reach of it and the audience of it and all of that?
I think, I'm not a mind reader, but I would say 90% of it is viewed through the prism of, you know, the kid that venerated Michael Jordan growing up and was a fan and understood his impact and, you know, changed his number because of Jordan. And 10% is like, yeah, but I'm great too.
Of course.
You know, and you know, whether he thinks he's better than Jordan or not, I don't know. I've never asked him that, but he certainly would say, yeah, that was a great era, but that's not now. And I'm now, you know, so this is the best era of NBA basketball. I'm sure.
I think he watches it with an eye on doing his own documentary about himself down the road.
Oh, of course. Well, certainly there will be. And it will be owned, and it will completely be his project.
Totally.
Because he has a production company.
Totally. And it will be titled The GOAT, because he thinks he's the best of all time, which he said.
The king, you know, something like that. Yeah, of course.
So I came away impressed in particular. I mean, I wanted to see more Jordan and less everybody else because, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, Michael Jordan is just insanely charismatic. But beyond that, I came away impressed with Phil Jackson, Steve Kerr, Reggie Miller, and B.J. Armstrong more than anyone else of the sort of contemporary group around them. Mm-hmm. And I wondered how you felt about those people.
Well, they're all great talkers. So it wasn't a surprise to me that they were great in this documentary because all of them are incredibly good communicators. And I must tell you something, I already had an appreciation for Phil, but I gained even more appreciation for Phil watching this because can you imagine having to coach this guy every day, you know, to get the best out of him and to get him to kind of buy into a team concept when he's so good and everybody in the league knows they can't stop him. And he knows it, and so he wants the ball every play. And getting him to pass the ball to John Paxson in the 91 finals, I mean, I think that's one of the great feats of coaching ever. And then to be able to sustain that over that 8-year stretch, I mean, I just, you know, and I know some of what Phil says is self-serving, but Phil is a really smart guy.
Yes.
And he is really good with people. He really is good with people. And I had forgotten, this is to Michael's point earlier, I had forgotten that Rodman, just in the middle of the season, just went to Vegas. Just, I got to go to Vegas. And they let him do it, you know, and most teams wouldn't have let him do it. So I gained real respect for Phil, again, throughout the documentary. But, you know, Steve is, he's a great talker. He's right. A great sub-student of people also. He's got incredible empathy for people. Reggie is a great talker. He's a great communicator in terms of the game and the knowledge of the game and what it takes. And I've always liked talking to BJ because BJ did something that was very rare for a player. You know, he actually went and got books about the most talented people ever, like Mozart and people like that, just so he could have some idea of what it was like to be around people like that when he got to the Bulls. So he gave some thought to it. Like, how do I communicate with this savant, you know, this genius?
Yeah.
And BJ, you know, talked at length about that during his time in Chicago. And so those players don't surprise me in terms of their ability to communicate, or those people, I should say, in terms of their ability to talk about that time, you know, intelligently.
I've got to tell you that I came away with it loathing Dennis Rodman. Loathing Dennis Rodman. Just saying, I mean, he is the most self-justifying human being I have ever seen, and they kept him on the team, and yes, he produced, but I hated him. I do. I actually found myself viscerally hating him. Do you understand that? I mean, is that reasonable?
I mean, I think it's a little unreasonable.
Okay.
I don't hate Dennis. I think it's an act, of course, and I think he's trapped himself in this act that he has to be outrageous and crazy and do all those things, because that's not Dennis, with the Dennis Rodman that everybody knew when he first got to the league with the Pistons. You know, Dennis was a very humble, very quiet, you know, guy that sobbed when he got the, you know, Defensive Player of the Year honor, you know, the first award he got in the NBA, because he couldn't believe that someone like him could rise to that level. But I don't hate him. I mean, I just think it's an act, you know. But he was that good because he was on. He too won 5 championships. So I mean, he's
that's right.
He's got a great resume. So he was great. He wasn't good. He was a great basketball player.
There's one question. There's one question that sort of looms over everything, I think, and that is: was it fair to Jerry Krause? Was the documentary, because he's dead. Was it fair to Jerry Krause? Even at the end where Scottie Pippen says, well, he was the greatest general manager. Well, Scottie, you spent 9.5 episodes killing the guy.
Right.
So,
no, it wasn't fair. It was not fair.
Yeah, how do you, because you knew Krause, how do you view that?
Yeah, it was never fair, Tony. It wasn't fair when he was alive. I mean, I've said this many times over the past few weeks. I mean, you know, how could anyone possibly think Michael Jordan versus Jerry Krause in any context is a fair fight? I mean, it isn't. You know, and especially not back then when Michael was the most famous, most charismatic, most successful, you know, incredibly good-looking, incredibly glib person on earth. And Jerry is this secretive, short, fat guy. I mean, come on.
Right.
That's not fair, you know. And there's never going to be fair, and it certainly isn't fair now. And one of the things I think is fair criticism of the documentary is that they – you know, you can't interview Jerry, obviously, but there were people you could have interviewed. There were lots of people that Jerry brought into that front office, including B.J. Armstrong. Now, I don't know if they asked him about Jerry, but there were lots of people that Jerry brought in that knew him, you know, certainly better than I did and most reporters did, that could have at least given you his perspective on it. I doubt his wife would have cooperated with it, knowing that Michael was involved in it. But there were other people in that front office, and I've written this and said this many times over the years. You know, Jerry was a very innovative guy. He brought in Al Vermeil, who was one of the first strength and conditioning guys that really took it seriously in terms of weight training and getting stronger. He hired Karen Stack, who was a great player at Northwestern in the early 80s, great basketball player, and you know, and put her in the front office, and she did a lot of secretarial work, but she also worked out players before drafts. You know, I mean, so, you know, he brought in Clarence Gaines, who was Big House Gaines' son, and he brought in Billy McKinney, African-Americans, when African-Americans never got front office jobs, and certainly not non-star playing African Americans. You know, Hall of Fame players got front office jobs, but not people like Billy McKinney and Clarence Gaines. So, you know, Jerry was a very forward-thinking guy, and he built everything around Michael Jordan. He didn't draft Jordan. I've said, we all know that Rod Thorne drafted Jordan, but he put everything else in place, including Phil Jackson, by the way. And so
that's right.
He should get more credit than he gets, and he certainly should get more credit than he got in the documentary. I think that's fair.
I'll get you out of here on this. Michael Jordan, the moment where the documentary should have ended, of course, is when Michael Jordan takes the earpiece out and says break.
Yeah,
and
he
has revealed himself. That's at the end of 7. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think Michael Jordan feels about this whole thing?
I think my guess is that I think, you know, and I think the director has said this, that his Michael's reservation was that people would look at this and think that he was a jerk, and there's stronger words you could use, but I'm not going to use them by watching this. And I'm sure that, you know, casual viewers, you know, people that maybe don't follow the NBA as closely as you or I do. Yeah. They might say, gosh, that guy's kind of mean. You know, why did he have to be so mean to his teammates? But I also think that's who he was. I mean, he was a taskmaster in that regard, and he would challenge people, and the people that stood up to him, it's not like he didn't include them. I mean, Kerr's in there, right?
That's right.
Scottie's in there, Phil's in there, you know, and so BJ's in there to a certain degree, you know, so their point of view is reflected in the series. But my guess is that overall, I think he would say it's a fair and accurate representation of who he is. You know, they decided not to make it a 360. So there's no family in there. I mean, other than the kids get a cameo at the end. There's no first wife, right? There is his mother. His mother's in there to some degree. But so they made decisions. It's not all in there. But I think there's enough of it in there so that you could say, yeah, that's pretty much who the guy was. And it's fair. It's not unfair to him in both ways. It's not unfair to him in the sense that it's too harsh, but it doesn't make him out to be a saint either.
Does not.
You know what I mean?
Does not. It does not. I mean, it allows you to step back and say, in fact, is winning worth this? Michael Jordan thinks it is, but not everybody will. Thank you, David.
Yeah, you're welcome, Tony. Thank you.
Go out and find a car. Go out and find your car. David Aldridge, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with Barry's Verluga. When we return, I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This episode of The Tony Kornheiser Show is brought to you by the new podcast, Go and See, hosted by my old friend Malcolm Gladwell. He wasn't my old friend. I mean, I knew him. I doubt he even remembers me. Produced by the team behind Revisionist History, Go and See is a 6-part series focused on Lexus and the philosophy of Genchi Genbutsu, which means go and see for yourself, an idea that stems from the belief that if you experience something yourself, you have a better understanding of people and how to create something for them. In the series, Lexus invites Gladwell to Japan to discover their unconventional thinking and processes firsthand. Find out how a Japanese tea ceremony influenced the engineering of a car window, how the sound of an engine is tuned like a musical composition to elicit certain emotions, how understanding samurai warriors' eyes led to a suspension innovation. Gladwell learns that no detail is left behind and that a car company can learn more about cars by studying people. So go inside Lexus's headquarters in Japan, ride along on a top-secret test track with a master driver, sit in the expertly designed seat that actually lowers to welcome you into the vehicle. Follow Gladwell on his journey wherever you like to listen. They're all out. You can get them all. Visit Lexus.com/curiosity for more stories like these.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I say good morning to myself, then I switch on California and I pretend I'm someone else. I'm a wanted man and I'm looking for you. And suddenly,
Julian Babin with a song called Goodnight California, sent in by his cousin, Kristen John LeBlanc from Nova Scotia, Canada. This stuff is good. This is good. Michael, if good people want to send their good music. How do they do it?
Send us your good music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
Barry Zwaluga joins us now, and there's a whole bunch of questions that I wrote down last night, and they all get changed now because of something I saw this morning. I saw an ad on the early Channel 4 news for what is being called a virtual ring ceremony at 7 p.m. on Sunday. Barry, I hope you're aware of this. What is it, and how is it going to take place?
I'm not clear on the details. They're going to announce them later, but yes, I am aware of it. You know, this is a first, right? There's a tons of firsts going on right now, but the Nationals obviously haven't been able to raise a pennant and get their rings and do right. all that stuff that they earned last summer. So, I mean, they're going to do it in some way on like a Zoom call, and guys will be in their houses, and they won't physically be getting the rings, I don't believe, but they'll see what they look like, and it'll be a fan event. Tony, I don't know if you were aware a couple months ago now, kind of early on when this started, Masson was replaying each of the Nationals' postseason wins. And
Michael watched every one of them, right, Michael?
Just wait for the lineup for this Sunday. I think Barry might be getting to it.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, and then, but Ryan Zimmerman hosted a Zoom call with all the, first with the coaches and Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo, and then brought in all the players, and they were watching the game and drinking beers, and fans could watch it through the Nats Facebook page. It was, I mean, kind of a surprisingly fun event. It felt like, and Zimmerman even said this on the call, it felt like, you know, fans were getting to see what it was like on a team flight. So maybe there will be some levity elements like that to this thing.
So do you think it's going to be possible? Like, if I understand Zoom correctly, and I'm sure I don't, but I've been on a couple of these calls, little boxes proliferate on your screen. So these will be boxes with the players themselves, but the rest of us, if we choose to, can peek in on it, do you think?
For sure. I mean, I don't want to overstate what I know about it in terms of is it going to be Zoom, but yes, that's my understanding. And certainly it's not going to be private. The whole point of this is to allow the fans to revel in the moment as well. And I'm sure it also doesn't preclude an actual ceremony when and if there are games with fans at some point. You know, that's probably not until next season. But yes, I would think that certainly fans would be encouraged to peek in on it all.
Do we know, is this going to be on Masson? Is that what we assume? By the way,
MLB Network.
I'm flipping through Masson last night, and I land on the Dan Colco talk show. Colco and Company or something like
Friends.
That. Yeah, what is that? What is that? Colco. Who did he have on? He had somebody on? It was not a player, I thought. I don't know who it was. But, that's... We remember Dan Colco.
We love Dan Colco.
Yeah, so he's got his own show. So I assume then maybe preparatory to it, that maybe if it's the MLB Network, maybe they'll show like Game 7?
It's possible. I mean, you're asking me details that I'm not prepared to answer. They've already shown Game 7. They're going through all the classics. Maybe they'll do a Nats run-up to it.
7:30 wild card game, 9:30 game 4 of the NLDS, 12:00 game 5 NLCS, 2 and 11 game 6 World Series, and at 8:00 after the ceremony, game 7.
And that's on MLB Network.
So that's on MLB Network. I think the ceremony might be on. Yeah, that's on Masson.
Okay. All right. So that's pretty exciting. But you don't think, Barry, that they'll get the rings physically, right? They won't, unless. They sent them out to people.
They could send them out for sure, but I don't know the answer. I just don't know the answer.
Can I just say, and it's not in form of a question, it's sort of in the form of something tearful, I really miss baseball. I don't miss any other sport as much as I miss baseball. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, my goodness. For sure. And it's because at this point of the year, and particularly as we get deeper in, if we get into June and deeper into the summer, it is my daily programming. You know what the feeling is the night that the Nats are off, right? You're like, well, what the heck am I going to do now? Like, even if there's something good on or you know, there's plenty of other options. It just feels like, well, shoot, I wish the Cubs series was starting tonight and not tomorrow. And it's such a rhythm thing. It fills so much time and discussion. There's always issues: who's hot, who's hurt, who's pitching tonight. You look forward to Scherzer starts. You look forward to Strasburg starts. And I'm just talking about, you know, the local team, because that's
no, I agree. I sit there and I go, no, they're not putting Zimmerman up in this situation. No, exactly. It's going to be 5-4-3. No, right, like
yes.
That. Yeah,
yes, that stuff. So there's daily angst. There's daily joy. There's you know, daily questions. Sometimes you get answers. There's, you know, pick apart the manager's move. Why did they sign this guy? Oh, Anthony Rendon is hitting 350 for the Angels. Yeah, there's just so much content and that fills your brain if you want it to. And if you don't want it to, if you want to take a pause for a few days, you know it'll be there when, you know, if you're out of touch on a Monday and Tuesday, it's right there for you on Wednesday night and through the weekend. And it's such a loss of not just way to fill time, but interesting subject matter, you know, and I mean, all the rabbit holes I would go down.
But it's a greater loss now because they won the World Series and they got no run. They were obscured by the scandal with Houston, and now they are obliterated by the pandemic. This was going to be the year that you revel in. I know they lost Rendon, but it just does seem like they had another chance because pitching proved what starting pitching can do, and it's gone. It hurts especially here because they were the champions, right?
Yeah, I agree with that, and I also agree with the idea that they had a chance. You're right; they lost, you know, arguably their best player, but they brought the band back together, and the band is a pretty good band. And you know, meanwhile, Max Scherzer's not getting younger. He's got 2 years left on his deal. That's a pretty big part of the anchor. Maybe all this rest is going to help him recover from, you know, a deep run in the postseason. You could look at it that way too. But time is marching on, even as baseball isn't. And you're definitely right. The Nats have been robbed of their moment, first by the Astros and now by obviously the pandemic.
Do you think it's coming back? The baseball goes out of its way to leak new plans once a week. They either call up Rosenthal or Nightingale or somebody, and you know, and then you wait for the general public to shoot it down. Do you think it's coming back?
I really wrestled with this one, Tony. I mean, I got a copy of the plan that they sent to the union over the weekend, and it's exhaustive in its detail, but it just makes you think, like, this is too much to chew off. Now, and there's also, of course, going to be an economic fight, even if they agree on the health and safety stuff. I can't imagine that two sides would allow economics to come between them at a time that when they're really trying to save the sport. And I will say this, like, you know, some revenue, both for players and for owners, is better than no revenue. So there is a motivating factor if they convince themselves and are convinced by medical experts that it's safe to do so without fans in the stands. You know, there's a lot of motivation to get it done. But when you look at all the hoops they're trying to jump through and the, you know, a baseball that's put in play has been touched by two players in the field, we take it out of play. We're not allowed to throw the ball around the infield after an out. You can't spit sunflower seeds. Please don't shower at the ballpark. We're taking your temperature twice a day. MLB obviously wanted to go over the top in terms of saying, being able to say to players, we have your best interest and your health and safety in mind every step of the way. But I wonder if it just seems like too much. I think there's a lot of wood to chop before there's going to be baseball games.
I feel the same way about baseball that you do. I don't think they're going to have football either because there's more moving parts in football. That's a total contact game. I just don't know. I don't know how they do it without a vaccine. I just, or some way to contain it. I, without fans, nobody's even thinking about fans anymore. And by the way, the experience of a game, any sort of team game without fans is diminished. It is.
Oh, for sure.
That's why Joe Buck is 100% right when he says we got to pipe in noise and we got to put CGI, you know, fans in the stands. He's right. He's right. You watch these soccer games and you just go, it's like a scrim. Who cares? Right?
Yes. Cares. Yes. And I mean, I have one small data point in that experience, which was like I covered the game in Baltimore at Camden Yards a few years ago after the riots with the Freddie Gray murder. And, you know, that was a one-off. It was a one-day thing. And it was totally bizarre. And it did, you know, not that an Orioles-White Sox game in the middle of the season is going to bring a lot of juice to the ballpark, but it was just eerie and strange. And doing that 80 times, you know, I there's baseball players, all athletes are trained to tune out the surroundings and hone in on what the task at hand is, and that's a skill that some people hone better than others do. I think it would be oddly a distraction not to have that buzz around, and different players would, you know, the crowd gets you up. I mean, Bryce Harper used to talk about this all the time. It's hard to get into Tuesday night in Miami with 6,500 people in the stands, whereas if you're, you know, in at Nats Park and it's sold out and it's a big game against the Cubs, like that invigorates you in some way. So there'd be some sort of weird dealing with whatever that new normal would be. And it just wouldn't, it's going to feel strange if it happens at all.
Very strange. Did you watch the golf on Sunday?
So I was actually playing golf at the time, but I obviously read about it, and I was a little more interested in the match coming up than that match anyway. So, but fun, right? I mean, good
yes.
back and forth between the guys.
Yes, it was fun. The one with Tiger and Phil and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady figures to be more entertaining, because it's going to be, I hope they do it correctly and bring out all the personalities and make something like that happen. And even if, like Michael, you suggest they throw footballs back and forth.
They have to do some skills challenge, but they've had time to prep scenarios where they can have the banter, because that's what was lacking at Seminole.
But I mean, golf can come back. Auto racing can come back. Horse racing, the Belmont is going to be in the normal Belmont spot. You know, that can come back. Maybe tennis can come back. Team sports, Barry, different. It's just different. Different.
It's different. And you know, I'm evaluating right now whether to go to Fort Worth for the first PGA Tour event. That really seems like it's going to go off in the middle of June. And you know, again, they've been very explicit with their health and safety protocols and asking the players essentially to live in a bubble between the hotel and the course and not go out to eat, even if it's permitted, but order in and have room service, all that kind of stuff. That seems like, you know, you've got 156 players, 156 caddies, a few hundred support personnel, and that is just the traveling circus, right? The whole group kind of picks up and then plops down at the next site, and you almost could have, you don't want to be naive about it, but you almost have like a traveling bubble, particularly when the players are going to be tested at each new site. It seems feasible that they could pull it off. And man, you know, the NASCAR ratings were really strong the other day. I can't imagine that the golf ratings, both for, you know, the Tiger and Phil and Brady and Manning match, but at the actual tournaments, I think they would be through the roof, because on a Sunday afternoon, I mean, I like to turn on the golf anyway, but in a vacuum where there's nothing else, it would be extra fun.
Yeah, I just, who knows? I alternate between being hopeful and then being what I consider realistic.
Same here.
You know, that it's just not going to happen. Thank you, Barry. Talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Tony. Thanks very much.
Barry's Verluga, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will have email and a jingle when we return, and I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Get your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Mr. Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of your folks.
That is Darius Rucker, who was Hootie of Hootie and the Blowfish. Very nice of him to do
that. Still can't believe you recorded the mailbag.
It's really nice. That's it for us today. I have to rush out of here. I'm going to see my girlfriend, Fawn Leibowitz. She's making me a pot. Oh, it's a terrible kiln accident, isn't it? Thanks to our guests today, Washington Post columnist Barry Zwerluga, David Aldridge of The Athletic. Thanks as well to our sponsors, Vincero and the podcast Go and See, hosted by Malcolm Gladwell. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Let me wish Phil's mom a happy birthday. I think that was yesterday,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Phil's mom, who her moment every year, of course, is when we do the brackets. And we were going to do the brackets, but there was no tournament, so we didn't do that. So Phil, I know, is listening. Wish your mom happy birthday for us. Nigel, you want to thank the people at Bethesda Bagels?
Oh, yes. Thanks to Danny and the gang, Bethesda Bagels, located at 4819 Bethesda Avenue. Open every single day from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Check them out at BethesdaBagels.com and stop by. Grab some food. They're just the best. We love them.
Ted Kennedy in West Des Moines, Iowa. He says, thank you for what you are asking. Slow down, I'll tell you. During this pandemic, my 10-year-old son Luke has read all the required books for school. He has read all the age-appropriate books we have at home. The library is closed. We have resorted to pulling books off the bookcase. He stumbled upon a book that got him very, very excited. Dad, I know this guy. I'm Back for More Cash was the next book that he and I read. We have spent the last few nights reading your book. At first, I wasn't sure how it would go. Would he understand it or like it? Mr. Tony, he loved it. Each night we have to stop reading because my wife and 7-year-old daughter Sarah would yell at us to stop laughing and go to bed. How great is that? That is a great email. Makes me very happy. I want to thank Len Volan. Len Volan wrote a very long email having to do with Lyle Alzado and the sort of parallel lines that our careers have taken over the course of our lives. I will just read the first two paragraphs. I'm a longtime listener and fan. Your Monday podcast, this is a few weeks back, was especially memorable for me because you brought up Lyle Alzado. He was my neighbor on Longacre Avenue in Woodmere and part of our class of 67 at Lawrence High. And then he sent a picture of Lyle Alzado, who weighed 175 pounds at the time, and then, because he took steroids all the time, bulked up to 275 at one point. Here's the paragraph I wanted to read. You may not want to read the rest on your podcast, but I find it how incredible it is. To some extent, we have run parallel lives. I grew up in Woodmere, you and Hewlett and Lynbrook. I went to camp Witherwind, Utakiuma. We used to play Witherwind. Their colors were yellow and blue. They were a good athletic camp. My camp counselor was Billy Cunningham. Billy Cunningham, the Hall of Fame Billy Cunningham, the Kangaroo Kid, brought to camp by Al Badane, I guess was a coach at Erasmus High School. Yours was Larry Brown. Your friends with Larry Zebrack. I with his Indian head camp friend Bob Fishman. In high school, we seniors often had a quick lunch at Shores in Hewlett, and you frequented the diner on Central Avenue in Cedarhurst. Sunday dinners at the Bamboo Inn. The soup bowl had everything in it, and the suburban restaurant. These are places in Hewlett that I grew up with. I went to SUNY Buffalo, what is now SUNY Binghamton. Jets, Mets, Knicks, 69-70, certainly a treat for me, as I assume it was for you. Our lives are parallel. He's a lawyer. He's done very, very well, and I'm grateful for all of the email, which is a long email. Okay. From Pat Lathrop in Rogers, Arkansas. AR is Arkansas, right? I assume.
I believe
AK is Alaska, so that's AR, right? Has got to be Arkansas. Your story of the drive-through bank teller reminded me of an experience my sister Kelly once had at her bank. She was in line behind one car with a driver who was clearly having trouble with the exchange. He seemed to be arguing through the speaker and throwing his arms about. My sister was getting frustrated with the wait. Upon retrieving the canister, this is the pneumatic tube, the angry man emptied it of his things, then tossed it out in front of his car, then ran it over, smashing it to pieces. My sister pulled up and couldn't stop laughing, trying to explain to the teller what had happened. P.S. I'll get a haircut when Disney World opens. This is from Sarah All, A-U-L-L, who describes herself as a fellow only child and English major. And she talked about her parents going to the bank. Mom, your father was forced to use a drive-thru at the bank earlier this week because of the coronavirus. We went to town to pay the mortgage. Me, why are you two going to the bank in the first place? You're both in a vulnerable age group for coronavirus. Mom, what are we supposed to do? We had to pay the mortgage. Me, pay it online like everybody else in America. Don't you do auto withdrawal? No, you know we do not know how to use the internet. Besides, I don't want anyone stealing our financial information. The bank already has your financial information. What do you think the tellers do on the computer? I refuse to be careless with my private information like you are, Sarah. And then the father. I couldn't figure out how to open the pneumatic tube at first. It took me about 5 minutes. Then you had to press a button. It would have been so much faster inside. Me, oh God, how big was the line behind you, Mom? I think I counted 7 cars. Me, do you realize how many surfaces you had to touch that could have had the virus on them, Mom? What do you want us to do? Not pay the mortgage? And this is for people who are my son's age. This is how it works when these things happen. You just don't understand. One more. I'll read one more from Aaron Halliday. I'm writing to you in hopes that you will be having a podcast on Wednesday, May 13th. And so we did. That was last Wednesday, right? We did, but I didn't see this. I'm a motor coach operator for Peoria Charter in Peoria, Illinois. Typically, I'm traveling across the United States, and I'm only home 4 to 5 nights a month. In the 2 years that I've been in this profession, I've even traveled to Washington, D.C., and in my free time have ventured to the Refugee Safeway, Calvert Woodley, and Bethesda Bagels for an egg sandwich. Sadly, I've been home since March 15th because of the pandemic. More or less, our entire industry has been crippled with zero assistance from the federal government. The airlines, the hotels, the trains have all received some form of government assistance, but not the motor coach industry. When our nation is hit with a national emergency, the motor coach industry is there to provide transportation. We transport troops. We assist the railways when there's a breakdown or an accident. We transport athletic teams from all ages and skill levels, and we provide safe and efficient travel to millions of tourists annually. Sadly, the government has missed the bus. Today, nearly 1,000 buses will invade, this is last week, the nation's capital to promote awareness of this fact. It is called Motor Coaches Rolling for Awareness, and we're seeking assistance to the small, family-owned companies that have been affected by this pandemic. There are bus companies from every state that will be represented, even Alaska and Hawaii. Given that you are a resident, I know you are fully aware of the importance of the motor coach industry. I rode a motor coach for 3 years doing Monday Night Football with Jeff, of course, and its impact on bringing tourists to the area. Please wish these drivers well on their mission and support them as they maneuver the streets. I am late by a week of doing that. They have my sympathy and they have my empathy. And this is from a loyal little since 1998 who signs at La Cheeserie, Aaron Halliday. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You know, they all get involved and they all got their gear already. And so they're going to be all colored up in the maroon and black and yellow.
You're a dope.
Falls apart in the morning when I realize that you're not there. When the big wheels start turning, but they're going nowhere. Yeah, they're going nowhere. And these medications for my mind create beautiful designs. Sometimes I'm so far ahead of myself, I leave my whole self behind. I leave my whole self behind. Make a cup of coffee, cause it's still early for me. Then I get to thinking, oh yeah, I'm thinking constantly. Maybe I should leave. Maybe I should fly. I just don't believe I could, even if I try. I'm stuck inside. Stuck inside with no place to hide. I'm stuck inside, no place to hide. I'm stuck inside, no place to hide. Yeah. say good morning to myself, and I switch on California, and I pretend I'm someone else. I'm a wanted man, and I'm looking for you. And suddenly the day is by, and I break down and cry and say good night, California, good night. Where did you go? I saw you last night on a TV show, and broadcast radio had you on 12 noon on the stereo. I thought you should know that on a postcard, when the portrait of the Redwater Man just says it's so hard, read the postscript if you can. Bear to see what's left of me now. I say good morning to myself, then I switch on California, and I pretend I'm someone else. I'm a wanted man, and I'm looking for ya. And suddenly the day is by, and I break down and cry and say good night, California, good night. Good night, California. Good night. And so they say things won't always go your way. Another day, just locked up just like yesterday. Then it dawns on me, admission is free. I say good morning to myself, then I switch on California, and I pretend I'm someone else. I'm a wanted man, and I'm looking for you. And suddenly the day is by, and I break down and cry and say good night, California, good night. Good night, California, good night. We made it through another day, just me and all of you. I said good morning to myself, then I switched on California, made believe I was someone else. I was wanted man, and I was looking for you. And suddenly the day was by, and I broke down and cried and said good night, California, good night. Good night, California.